your screen?
Yes, yes, I'm able to share.
Okay. So Shishir is a mechanical engineer from the Neutrino Division Mechanical Engineering Group, and he's going to be presenting on the assembly and test, transport fixture, as well as the hangar system for the time projections chamber of the SBND experiment. Shishir, whenever you're ready, you can take it away.
All right. So first things first, thank you, EAC, for giving me an opportunity to present today. Good morning, everyone. My name is Shishir, and I will be discussing about the assembly transport frame and the roof hangers. I'm from the Neutrino Division. I'm working in mechanical subgroup as a staff engineer. I've been here since October 2017 for about 4.5 years now. I provide engineering support to SBND. Prior to coming to Fermilab, I finished my master's in aerospace engineering at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. I also worked on Hyperloop project there. And before coming to United States, I worked as an intern at an aerospace startup in Bengaluru, India. All right, so these are the topics that I'm going to go through today. I'll first introduce everyone to the assembly transport frame and the roof hangers. And then we'll take a step back and we'll see how it sort of fits into the mission. Why do we need an assembly transport frame from the near detectors context? How one of the major subsystems of the near detector, which is the time projection chamber, also known as TPC, how that is a sophisticated technology and requires an ATF to assemble them. And then we'll jump into the assembly transport frame and a variety of configuration in which it operates. And then we'll take a look at the roof hangers and we'll see how that ties in. So let's begin. The assembly transport frame, like I said, has a few configurations. The assembly configuration, the transport configuration, and the pre-installation configuration. So why do we have this configuration? We will take a look at them later. In the assembly configuration, we will assemble the subsystems together. In the transport configuration, we will take this whole assembly inside the frame from D0 building, where we are doing the assembly work, to the near detector building, where the experiment is going to be. And in the pre-installation configuration, we will add some more elements of the detector and then put it into the cryostat pit. Also, at all times, this facilitates as a clean environment room. Then we have roof hangers, which helps us link the time projection chamber that we are building inside the ATF to the roof of the detector. And you may wonder why. The time projection chamber of the near detector hangs off of the roof of the detector. It hangs from the roof. And so we need this connecting element called the roof hanger. It not only supports the weight of the time projection chamber, it also provides some manipulation in the X, Y, and Z direction and some rotations, just in case if there are some adjustments or alignments that we have to do once they are installed from the roof. So yeah, let's see. Why do we need an assembly transport frame from a near detector perspective? Why do we need all of those configurations? Why do we need a roof hanger with the manipulation capability? It is all tied into the technology and the sophistication associated with the near detector, and hence the neutrino work. The time projection chamber that we are putting together is a very sophisticated technology. It needs to be handled with care, and it is a very high precision assembly. And so to be able to put it together, we required something like an assembly transport frame. Also, neutrinos are weird particles. They change their flavors. And hence, we built a frame which changes its flavors also. The neutrinos are known to change their flavors. The three flavors that we know as of now are the electron neutrinos, muon neutrinos, and the tau neutrinos. And this kind of characterization and understanding, sometimes some neutrinos appear, sometimes some neutrinos disappear. And what's happening? It's baffling a lot of scientists. And so there is this sophisticated technology that we are putting together to be able to understand them better. So in the short baseline neutrino program, there are three detectors: near detector, microboon, and far detector. Near detector is the closest to the target, as you can see, the target being the yellow spot, and the near detector is the first red spot. And then you have micro boon, which is at 470 meters, and far detector at 600 meters. The reason we have these three detectors at three different distances is because the neutrino, as it oscillates, changes its flavor, which means that if we have a beam and the same beam passing through the three detectors, you will not see the same data. And hence, that is what we want to understand, what's changing and what's appearing and what's disappearing. So the story starts with the mini boon detector, which is not the part of the short baseline program. This is one of the old detectors we had, one of the first detectors that we used to understand neutrinos. What is mini boon detector? Mini boon detector based off of a technology called as the Cherenkov technology. It used water as a scintillator, water as a medium. Mini boon gave us a lot of information, but it was still not as good as the liquid argon TPC technology that we now have in the short baseline technology. Why? Because the current technology gives better imaging. What does that mean? It means that micro boon, which is very close to where mini boon used to be before, has technology to detect and characterize particles better than mini boon. As you can see here in the Cherenkov versus LAR TPC imaging, the mini boon events recorded shows us some circles, some spots. Some spots are distinct circles, and we know they are muon neutrinos because muon neutrinos give you the distinct circles. And then some others are fuzzy, and we don't know whether if they are electron neutrinos or they are gamma particles. And when we had micro boon optic, we could then make clear distinction between the electron neutrinos and the gamma neutrinos. So here's the first thing that we have established. We have established that the liquid argon time projection chamber that we are using in the short baseline program has better imaging capabilities than its predecessors. But we wish the buck stopped at imaging. Imaging is not there is all to the neutrinos. There is a little more to neutrinos that we don't know. And that is to do with the experiences that we've had with the neutrinos. So for example, the energy-driven behavior that we see here in the mini boon appearance plot up top at the top right corner, they say something. What do they say? When the mini boon was recording data, we were expecting the neutrinos a certain way, but we got data from the detector in a very different manner. What does that mean? When you have a beam coming out of the injector, not all the neutrinos are in the same energy state. Meaning, when you go to McDonald's and when you get a fries in a pouch, not all the fries are going to be the same size and shape. They're all going to be different, but they're all potato fries. Similarly, the energy of the neutrinos that come out of the target, they're all muon neutrinos here at Fermilab. We inject the muon neutrinos. They're all muon neutrinos, but they're not in the same energy spectrum. Some are at 200 MeV and others are at 1200 MeV. Our bone of contention is at the low energy phase neutrinos because the probability of a neutrino to oscillate and change its flavor to something else is significantly high at its low energy phase. So that is the experience that we have had with the mini boon experiment. But there is a catch to this. We have a theoretical model and then we get data from the experiments. The theoretical model predicted all these colored spaces. It predicted a lot of noise. All these colored plots are noise. And then it predicted that we will see some electron neutrinos appear from the muon neutrino beam. However, when we collected the data, we saw significantly high number of events. That puts a question in our mind that, the theory says that so many things have to appear, but then more things are appearing. So we don't know what it is. And hence, it's called an appearance plot. More things appear, but they weren't produced. And then on the other hand, we have the reactor experiments where things disappear. So for example, in the reactor experiments, anti-electron neutrinos are emitted, the red line being the amount of anti-electron neutrinos that are emitted. The blue line is the amount that will be seen and detected. So we predicted the blue line as the amount that will be seen, which was consistent with most of the experiments. But when they put a detector very close to the target, they saw very less number of appearances. So let's superimpose the appearance and the disappearance. Low energy neutrinos give us more appearances. And when you have low energy neutrinos in a near detector, you have some disappearances and as well as appearances happening. And this is why we want to have a near detector, which, like I mentioned earlier, is closer to the target, which gives us the results from those superimpositions. So that's where the near detector comes in. Near detector has this thing called as time projection chamber, which helps us do these characterizations. The time projection chamber helps us detect the particles. It is consistent of a cathode plane, two anode planes parallel to the cathode planes, and it has photon detection systems attached to the anode planes, both the anode planes. We'll see what they mean. And the ATF will be used to put all of these systems together, these complicated systems together. We will use the field cage to attach all of this, to sort of encase all of this into a TPC, a time projection chamber. The time projection chamber, like I said, will have an electric field which will help us detect the particles. And we need to assemble it in this form. When we submerge this time projection chamber in the liquid argon at 90 Kelvin, what happens is the detector is designed in such a manner that the beam travels between the planes. And as the beam comes and hits the argon, liquid argon, it emits ionization electrons and light. The electrons will then go along. It will drift in a uniform electric field between the cathode and anode. It will drift to the anodes and it will give us some electric signals. And the light that emits will be captured by the photon detection system. And it is important for us to understand the electric charges, the plots that we get from the drift, and the light, the time at which the light was detected. Because these two, the plots and the time of the light, gives us a 3D projection of where the particle event happened and the characteristic of the particle based on the charge of the particle. So that is what the TPC does. Once we put this TPC together in the ATF, it will then be taken to the near detector building and it will then be coupled with the roof of the detector using the roof hangers. And after having installed all of this together, we will then take the whole assembly and put it into the cryostat kit. So this is, a long story short, the context of the near detector. And this is these are a few images. As you can see, to the right bottom corner, the black box that you see here is the photon detection system, which is attached to the APA plane. And then to the left, this big image, you can see the APA plane and the wires in them, the wires that collect the electric charge, as well as you see the CPA plane, which is the black plane behind the APA plane and the whole TPC. The white frame that you see here on the side is the ATF that we are using to assemble this. So that brings us to the assembly transport frame. Assembly transport frame, like I said, will be used in three configurations: assembly, transportation, and pre-installation. Assembly configuration will be used as a clean room because the detector needs to be installed in a assembled in a clean environment. Assembly configuration has to be something that gives us easy access because these are massive planes. They have to come in and we have to assemble them. We have to have some room to assemble them. So this gives easy access. And the assembly configuration has to have something called as a rest pad. Rest pad, why? Because like I said, the TPC hangs from the roof, but we don't have the roof when we are assembling the TPC. So you need to have some arrangement to hang it from up top, and hence the rest pads. Once we assemble this, we will then transport it from D0 assembly building to the near detector building. So first things first, as this was one of the biggest bone of contention we had, it has to clear the DAB door. You see, this detector is massive, but the doors that we have in these buildings where we are assembling them are not massive. So you had to have a frame that could fit the TPC inside it and at the same time clear the door of the building. So the ATF does that. And then it has to secure the TPC in place when we do the transportation. It can't swing, it can't do any, it can't mess the TPC. And then it can pull the ATF up the ramp as you go out of the DAB. There's a ramp at a 3-degree angle. So the ATF has to sort of run up the ramp, as you can see in the clips. It allows us to lift it and load it onto a trailer and then unload it from the trailer and push it into the near detector building. So the frame helps us accomplish all of those things. And in the pre-installation stage, once we are at the near detector building, it acts as a clean room. It helps us install the top cap. It helps us couple the top cap with the TPC, do some quality control, and at the end, move it to the cryostatic. This frame weighs 20 US shotguns and is 21 feet by 20 feet by 18 feet in terms of its size. So let's see. Like I said, it's a clean room. There's going to be a clean room environment within this frame. We have an inner clean tent and an outer clean tent. The inner clean tent, as you can see, protects the subsystems that we are assembling at all times. However, there will be times when the sides of the clean tent will be taken off because the planes need to come in. And so for those interim periods, we have something called as the outer clean tents. They provide protection when any such massive element of a sub-assembly is coming in. They move. As you can see here in the image, the movable clean tent is where my cursor is. And then we have some fixed outer clean tents. And to the right, you can see an image taken from inside the assembly, which is protected very well from the inner clean tent. So what happens in the assembly configuration, right? In the assembly configuration, all you have to the frame is a U-shaped frame and the outriggers that keeps the walls stiff. Because we are putting some weight on the wall, we don't want the wall to move too much. And so the outriggers keep it pretty stiff. We have this U-shaped arrangement and nothing on the sides because we want the sub-assembly elements to come in. Like you can see, we did some very, very comprehensive load test on this at 2 times the nominal weight, 200%. And they fared pretty well. There was very little giving of the walls when we loaded both the walls by themselves and the rest pads on which these massive planes are going to hang from. So what are rest pads? Rest pads are the pads that start the assembly. Like you saw, the first plane we put in was CPA, and then we put in the two APAs. And then we attach the field cages at the top, at the bottom, and on the sides. However, installing the field cages is not very simple. Like I said, it's a confined space inside the frame, and to access the bottom area of the ATF was difficult. And so we gave the provision to have risers on the rest pads, meaning we can raise the planes by 5-inch and 18-inch respectively for APA and CPA, and then install the lower field cage panels with the space that we have. And then once the panels are installed, we can put it back there. So rest pads give us that kind of provisions. It also gives us a little bit of adjustment capabilities. Remember, I said that these planes have to be in a very precise manner installed. And so they have to be, the parallelism between the planes have to be perfect. And rest pads offer us that adjustment as well. Rest pads also have a rubber padding that will damp the vibration during the transportation phase, and has a G10 plate which provides the electron isolation. It isolates the ATF frame and the planes that hangs from the rest pad. At one point, we also had to install this pump jack system. The pump jack system is something that allows the experimenters and the collaborators to sort of work on the planes that are hanging inside, whatever little electric equipments that they have to put or remove. The pump jack system allows them to do that. So that was also pretty interesting. So that's the assembly phase. Once you use all of these facilities to put the sub-assembly together, the TPC together, then we have to transport the TPC from the near detector, from the D0 building to the near detector building. And you see there is a change in the way the ATF frame looks now. The outriggers have gone and some other elements have come in. And the other elements are the side removable braces, the top brace, the push plate, and the tow bar. we take the outriggers off and we put all of these elements in. This way, it's pretty stiff and it's pretty safe to sort of transport it from one building to another building. There are some other bits to the transport phase, which we call the transport braces. These are the stops that attach to the TPC, and it ensures that it does not swing or move too much in the transportation phase. We have 6 points where these attach to the TPC, 4 points on the APA and 2 points on the CPA. These transport braces, on the other hand, attach to the ATF in this manner, at the walls and at one of the side braces. So the idea is to have some beam arrangements on the bed of the trailer, and then lift and sit the whole ATF on top of the trailer, secure them with the help of the brackets that we have designed for the transportation, and then transport it from the D0 building to the near detector building. Once it is at the near detector building, it will be in this form, and now it has to shape shift. So first, what we will do is, now that the transportation is accomplished, we'll take the transportation elements out bit by bit. So first things first, we'll take the tow bar off, and then we will add the outriggers, and then we will take the other side braces off. Now that we have all of this space, we will take the space advantage to install the top cap from the top at the near detector building. But please remember that the TPC is still not hanging from the top cap. It's still hanging from the rest pads that you see here on the sides, 1, 2, and 3. So what we need to do is, we need to couple the TPC to the top cap with the help of these roof hangers and then take the rest pads out. Once we have the TPC hanging from the roof, we will then open the gate and allow the TPC to go out. Here is a clip that shows how the whole gate opens with the hinge arrangement that we have. So yeah, that sums up. There's a lot of other elements associated with the ATF, which due to the in the interest of time, I can't discuss. We'll move on to the roof hangers. Roof hangers are the connecting link between the time projection chamber and the top cap. They not only support the weight of the TPC, they also provide us a little bit of adjustment capabilities in the X, Y, and Z directions, as you can see in these clips. We need these because, like I said, the planes have to be perfectly aligned to each other. The centers of the planes have to be perfectly in the same line, and they have to be very perfectly parallel as well. So in the process of installation, if there are elements that are not perfectly in precision, this allows us achieve those precisions. So for example, here is an image where you have the TPC hanging from the roof, and we have a cross-sectional image where you can see the whole roof hanger rod sort of goes through the roof, its insulation, and attaches to the support beam of the planes. Now, assume that one of the plane is not perfectly parallel to the other plane. We can use the manipulation system up top here and achieve that kind of that little adjustment that we need to do. The roof hanger have the adjustment capabilities in them. They have about plus or minus an inch worth of a play that we can exploit. As you can see, if you take a look at the cross section here, we have a vertical plate that allows 1 inch up and 1 inch down movement. And then we have an X and the Z manipulation plates right here. Please remember that the manipulations will be done using a screw jack, which you can see up top here and at the bottom, which also have plus and minus manipulation capabilities in the X and the Z directions respectively. We also have an angular contact spherical bearing, which sort of allows whatever little rotation that might happen, either due to the shrinkage of the TPC because it's going to be submerged in liquid argon, which is really cold, or as we do some movements to achieve some precision. So yeah, that's all about the assembly transport frame and the roof hanger. Special thanks to all the people who have helped us put this together. And even special thanks for the donuts that gave us a little more motivation to work. Yes, the mission was important, but the donuts were important too. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Shishir. That was an awesome presentation. So we have our keynote speaker coming up at 10, but we do have 5 minutes before then. So we got time for a couple of questions if anybody would like to ask.
I have one.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So what was the most challenging part of the overall design? Was it all of the requirements and configurations, or just, you know, what was the most challenging?
So the most challenging part was to design the walls of the ATF, which can handle the roof sitting on top of it. And at the same time, the TPC hanging from the roof, because now you have 23 US short tons worth of weight sitting on the two walls. And then at some point, you have to open one of the walls to allow the TPC to go out. So to accommodate that kind of requirement was one difficulty. The other difficulty that we've had was to have the whole APA plane with these wire planes come in and sit appropriately. And so the rest pads, to have those tad bit of adjustment capabilities in them and everything was a little difficult. But for the rest, the difficulty is something that we will see as we transport it to the near detector building. Hope we will not. We have prepared very elaborately for that.
That's great. Thank you. I think all too often, you know, we see the finished product, but not all of the pain that it took to actually get there. And it's interesting to what the obstacles were along the design process. So thank you.
Are there any more questions for Shishir? If not, was there one? Trista? Okay. There were some great elements in that presentation. I love the way that you equated the three flavors of the ATF to the three flavors of the neutrino. That was great. I would like to direct everybody to our keynote speaker, which will be starting in a couple minutes on a different Zoom room. So thank you very much, Shishir, for this presentation.
Thank you, Shishir. I appreciate it.